Do whales sneeze?
I'm not sure, but luckily I've got an amazing whale expert I can call on.
We essentially go out onto a boat, we go out to the sea, we look for whales, we see a whale breathing.
Who will take us through her experiments.
And then as the whale takes a breath, the drone is flown through the snot and will deliberately collect as much snot as possible.
And let us know the answer. How does that sound, Guy?
That would be fun.
Join us on The Conversation's Curious Kids, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, how's it going? It's come to my attention that things down here on Earth are just a little bit really boring right now. So, shall we have some fun in space instead? Good, I'd hoped you'd say yes. My name's Dan. This is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's the show where we uncover the secrets of the universe, and we also try and answer some of your toughest science questions. This week, we'll look at 40,000 kilometres of volcanoes and earthquakes. Also, we'll chat about how dogs have evolved to get you to do what they want. And we'll have an update on Boaty McBoatface, see what that's doing under the ocean somewhere. First, let's catch up with one of our favourite geniuses here on the Science Weekly. This is Professor Hallux.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk. Call accepted.
Hi, Professor. Water's so boring. It's so tasteless. Duff said.
Ah, that doesn't sound very good, does it? Now, I admit there are things that taste better than water, fresh raspberries being one of my favourites. But whilst you might think water is boring, if you pay close attention to it, you'll be surprised to see that all water doesn't taste the same. You'll even come across people whose job it is to taste water. Why don't you give it a go? Pour some water into a clean glass. The glass should be about a third full. Check that the water is clean by looking at it from above and from the side. Now place the glass under your nose and breathe deeply several times. Can you smell anything? Your sense of smell works better if you close your eyes. Finally, take a mouthful. Move the water around inside your mouth. Stop, wait, and swallow. Now pay attention to all the sensations you have in your mouth. Mmm, tastes good, doesn't it? Now try out different glasses wherever you go. A friend's house, a restaurant, a bottle of water from a shop. After a while, you'll develop a taste for water.
If you want, you can also give your glass of water a quick twist by simply adding a few leaves of mint or a few slices of citrus fruit such as lemon or orange. Flavoured ice cubes are also a fun idea. See what different flavours you can create. But remember, don't just add things like squashes, which have a lot of sugar within them.
You can also make your water look groovy by serving it in colourful glasses. And remember, water always tastes better when cold. So run the cold tap for a short while before filling your glass. Or leave a jug of water in the fridge. Or add some ice cubes. Have fun experimenting with your water.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk. With support from the Children's Health Fund. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
Remember, if you've got any science question rattling around your brain, if you want it answered and have a nice little shout out on the Science Weekly, you need to leave it for the show as a review over on Apple Podcasts. We've had loads this week coming in from all over the world. It's been amazing. This is from Gibson. Hey, Gibson, over in Canada. Gibson asks, what is an atom made from? Well, Gibson, an atom is a fundamental piece of matter, and everything in the universe, except energy, really is matter. So that means pretty much everything in the whole universe is made of atoms. So it's a good question, because this is kind of important. An atom is made of three tiny subatomic particles. You've got protons, neutrons, and electrons. Now, the protons and the neutrons make up the centre of the atom, which is called the nucleus. It's right in the middle. The electrons fly around the nucleus. Think of it a bit like planets whizzing around the solar system. It's quite simplistic, but kind of that's what it's like. And the different amount of these subatomic particles in the atom is what changes the matter that it is. And it also makes it react to other atoms and atoms, and then they start to make compounds and things like that. Brilliant question, Gibson. Thank you so much. Also, over on the Apple Podcast Store, this is from Mapple V2. You can call yourself whenever you like when you ask a question, by the way. Mapple asks, how are mountains made? We'll actually talk a little bit about this later on in our dangerous stand, but there are a few ways, Mapple. One is when two tectonic plates, which are the kind of jigsaw pieces under the ground that make up our Earth, it's when two of these are pushed together and they rub alongside one another, and the edges are squeezed upwards and they push up to become a mountain. Also, they're made by volcanic activity under the Earth's surface. This is when red hot rock called magma gets pushed upwards towards the Earth's surface, then it cools and becomes hard rock. And finally, mountains are also made by water eroding stone away over millions and millions of years. Thanks for that, Mapple. Lastly, this is from Lucy. Hey, Lucy, who asks, is it true that your heart stops when you sneeze? No. No, Lucy, it's not true. Not really. I mean, when you sneeze, your blood flowing to your heart does decrease for a little bit, and this changes the way that your heart beats for a second or so, but it doesn't stop entirely. Good question, though. Thanks for sending it in. If you've got something that you want answered on the show, if you'd love a shout-out as well, let me know what it is over on the Apple Podcast Store. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We're talking about smart technology this week and connected homes because it's Smart Home Week. Now, Sinead Murphy is from the security specialists Yale, who use smart tech to try and keep you safe. And she's on the phone. Hey, Sinead.
Hello.
Hey, thank you so much. I guess we should start. Just what is smart technology? Give us a quick intro.
So smart technology has been created to make lives easier. It has brought technology together and different products and services to provide convenience in the home and allow apps and smartphones to elicit responses to your everyday uses of technology.
Now, and these can do pretty amazing things. So you're from Yale, who, you know, they're security specialists, do burglar alarm, that kind of stuff. How does smart technology help you out?
We use smart technology for the alarm systems that are installed into people's homes. So it's domestic security, and we allow the communication between smartphone apps and the systems that are in place in homes so that you are able to check whether your alarm is armed from work, perhaps. And if you need to disarm the alarm, you'll be able to do so in case your mum was going to go in to your house while you're away, or if your partner's home early and they're going to put the dinner on, you'd be able to do so. You can also check if it's been armed or disarmed. These are particularly useful things when you are either on holiday or perhaps just away for the weekend.
And what about you, Sinead? How do you use smart tech in your life?
Oh, smart technology for me is absolutely essential. Of course, I have a Yale alarm, and I also have Yale cameras, which enable me to sort of check in on my house, both indoor and outdoor, wherever I am in the world.
Now, it's Smart Home Week. So what are you trying to get people to do over the next few days? How are you trying to make people more aware of what smart tech does?
Okay, so we are talking to lots of people in lots of different ways. We have had a huge response online, and we've also held a pop-up event in Charing Cross with Jason Bradbury, the tech guru, in order to speak to people and find out what it is that they are, what their concerns are around smart tech, especially with the security angle, because we don't trust anything with our home security. So we wanted to be able to find out what concerns were and how we can go about answering them and providing people with the information that they need to make the right choices and purchasing and getting involved with smart tech.
Now, you found out what a lot of people want with their smart technologies, what additions they want to their smart home. I thought we'd run through them, and you can just tell us if it looks like it might be happening soon, how that might work. So we'll start. People want a toilet that cleans itself. How would that work? Is it look like it might be likely?
Absolutely, yes. It looks like this has been introduced as a prototype in America. It may well be in the market sooner than you know. The technology would enable you to not necessarily have to clean the toilet ever again.
It's not too hard a job, really, cleaning the toilet. It's almost self-cleaning by definition. So how would this work, do you think, Sinead? Would it have like a little bit of tech up there, which you use an app and you can just clean the toilet while you're sat down on your sofa?
I think it would probably have to be a built-in unit. I don't know if it's something that you could add, because it's pretty fundamental to the hardware of the toilet, because it can't just be chemical alone, unless that was going to be another avenue for the development. But I think it would be a sealed unit you would purchase with the pure intention of never having to clean the loo yourself again.
Also, people have said that they would like to see, with Smart Home, a carpet which cleans itself.
Indeed. That sounds like an incredible amount of tech to sort of cover the floor space of your whole house. But what we may have to be pleased with in the meantime is a sort of robotic cleaner, not unlike the robotic vacuums that are available in the market right now.
No, but this is I think they want a cut, like something in the actual carpet, the carpet to be self-cleaning.
I think, again, because the size of the carpet, that tech would be huge, unless it was a chemical that you'd be able to use. But the carpet itself, I think that's a long way off. It may be a desired smart home addition, but I'm not sure that that's going to come into action anytime soon.
How pampered are the people that you asked this? I mean, you know, thinking about cleaning your carpet. There's only a few more. I'll take you through this one. An oven which turns itself off when sensing that dinner is cooked. That surely can't be too hard to make.
I shouldn't think so. And I believe that there are some ovens that do that now. But I think the whole idea with smart tech is that you would be able to have an element of control remotely. So that if your oven was programmed, which is a function at the moment, to turn off or on at a specified time, the idea with it being smart is that you would be able to do so from your smartphone. So if you were going to be home early, you could turn the oven on earlier than expected.
Now, I know that you're not necessarily in the product design team over there, but what is the future of keeping our homes safe using smart technology? What's the real dream? What do you want to see happen over there at Yale?
We just like to see a connected home. We are not exclusive about the product. We understand that for a true smart home, we need to work with lots of other big brands to be able to make that happen. And that was the sole purpose of our sponsorship of Smart Home Week, because we get to sit down at the table with huge brands like Samsung SmartThings, Tado, Google, and Philips Hue and Ring to make all of our systems work together. That's the idea, that we have a connected home so that you have one app for lots of things. That's the dream. That's the overall goal someday. And we are working very hard to develop our technology to make that happen.
Is there a worry that it's making people lazier?
I'm not sure it makes people lazy. I think it makes life more convenient, because it then frees you up to do other things. So you may well be doing other things that are totally not lazy, because you could be running marathons instead of cleaning your toilet.
Okay. That's why loads of people don't run marathons, because they're worried they need to get home and clean their carpet. Awesome. Anyway, Sinead, thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about Smart Home Week. You can find out loads more about this, by the way. If you're listening, head over to funkidslive.com. Right, for this week's Dangerous Dan, we're looking at the Earth itself, the very foundation of where we are right now, to check out the Pacific Ring of Fire. It's a large 40,000 kilometre long horseshoe shape at the base of the Pacific Ocean. It's between America, Asia, the Philippines. It extends quite far south as well. It's pretty much a long line where a group of plate tectonics meet, and because of that, it gets pretty deadly. Remember we were speaking about how mountains are made earlier on in the show? Well, it's these plates push together, they push the ground upwards when they get rammed into one another, and that makes a long line of volcanoes. It's got more than 452 volcanoes in it, and all but three of those have been involved in all but three of the largest 25 volcanic eruptions of the last 11,000 years have come from one of those volcanoes in the Ring of Fire. You see that? They're pretty deadly. You've got Mount St. Helens in the USA, that's part of it. Mount Fuji in Japan as well. Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines. It even reaches the South Pole. Mount Erebus in Antarctica. It makes up the southern tip of the Pacific Ring of Fire. Also, it doesn't just stop at volcanoes, because the majority of earthquakes take place here, as these tectonic plates rub together, causing friction and tension. The line is like looking into the very centre of the earth, seeing all the hot, spewing magma as everything shifts around you. I mean, just listen to its name. It's the Pacific Ring of Fire. I mean, that's pretty dangerous.
Do whales sneeze?
I'm not sure, but luckily I've got an amazing whale expert I can call on.
We essentially go out onto a boat, we go out to the sea, we look for whales, we see a whale breathing.
Who will take us through her experiments.
And then as the whale takes a breath, the drone is flown through the snot and will deliberately collect as much snot as possible.
And let us know the answer. How does that sound, Guy?
That would be fun.
Join us on the Conversations Curious Kids wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's some brilliant news. Technomum is back. She's our favourite geeky gadget guru on the show. We've got brand new episodes of Technomum series that you can listen to right now at funkidslive.com. She's always teaching us about the smart things that are behind all the gadgets and the tech that we use every day. And right now, she's here to teach us how everything is connected.
Technomum's Connected World.
Our new car's been playing up, so we took it to the garage. I was expecting to see a load of mechanics working up with spanners and wrenches. Not just a technician with a laptop. What's he doing? Why isn't he looking under the bonnet?
He doesn't need to. He's asking the car what's up.
Asking the car? Good joke, Mum.
I'm serious. There's a computer inside the car which takes measurements and records a lot of data while it's driving around. Not just how much fuel has been used, and is the battery correctly charging, but also if something's not working within its normal parameters. Once he's plugged in his laptop, he can check the readings and look online to diagnose faults.
Cool! The mechanic fixed the car, and we were back on the road in no time. I was asking lots of questions about what we had seen.
It's called the Internet of Things, ways to connect things together, and to the Internet in all sorts of ways. The possibilities are pretty exciting.
So, what if we had computers inside our bodies, like the car, taking measurements and recording problems?
Ew, not sure I'd like that.
Think about it. It could help spot and diagnose illnesses just like the car can diagnose mechanical problems.
Are illnesses the same as mechanical problems?
I reckon some are. Just imagine, instead of the doctor getting their thermometer out or listening to your chest with a stethoscope, you could just connect yourself to the internet and upload the information directly to your doctor's computer. And if he wasn't sure what was wrong with you, he could upload the information to the cloud and ask the doctors all over the world. In fact, we might not need doctors at all. Computers can analyse the data and diagnose you wherever you were in the world. And check this out. Computers could even connect automatically and find out if something was wrong before you even knew yourself.
Like a warning light on a car?
Warning. Warning. Dangerous amounts of gas forming.
How cool would that be?
And just think, if you had really smelly feet or horrible gloopy spots, you could become an internet sensation. Your virus could go viral.
I'm not sure I'd want anyone else to know about that.
It's something to think about. Medical matters can be embarrassing. People tell doctors things that they might not tell anyone else. It's important our medical details are kept private.
Yeah. I'd want my smelly feet to be super private.
As you can see, a connected world brings tons of benefits. Your idea would be amazing for people living in remote parts of the world or where there aren't any doctors nearby. But you need to be careful with the data. And you'll still need doctors and nurses to help remedy illnesses and provide some comforting words.
True.
Oops. Looks like we're low on petrol. We'd better top up.
Looks like my warning system's telling me I need a snack too.
Technomum's Connected World, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at funkidslive.com/technomum.
Let's look at the science that has been in your news this week. Brilliant to hear this name again, by the way. Boaty McBoatface, the robotic underwater vehicle, has made its first significant discovery. Go on, Boaty. It's produced a 3D map of deep ocean waters as they move away from Antarctica, and scientists say that they can link this behaviour to changing wind patterns. Also, dogs' eyes have evolved to appeal to humans. Researchers who have studied the change over thousands of years have discovered that small facial muscles around the dog's eyes have allowed them to mimic cute expressions to get a loving response so they can get you to do what they want you to do. And finally, a huge international research program has been launched to view the health of the Atlantic Ocean. Scientists will use loads of high-tech devices like robot submarines to scan the deep ocean and assess the effects of climate change. They'll make a 3D map of the ocean floor to hopefully find refuges where threatened species might have a chance of survival. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, if you've got a sciencey question rattling around your brain, something that you simply need to get answered because you can't sleep at night, well, just ask it to me. I'll sort it out for you. Leave it as a review for the podcast over on Apple Podcasts. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there. Leave us 5 stars. Drop your name as well so I know who you are. There's a little comment box at the bottom. It's dead easy. Just write the question and I will sort out the answer for you. Also, while you're on Apple Podcasts, it's one of the best places to hear all of the science series that we do. You've heard a couple today, including the brand new Techno Mum series. We've got more of those on there. You can find all the episodes as well on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, all good podcast places. You can also find them on the Fun Kids app and have a listen at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can listen to us all over the country on a DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app for a phone or tablet. And you can find us at funkidslive.com.
Do whales sneeze?
I'm not sure, but luckily I've got an amazing whale expert I can call on.
We essentially go out onto a boat, we go out to the sea, we look for whales, we see a whale breathing.
Who will take us through her experiments.
And then as the whale takes a breath, the drone is flown through the snot and will deliberately collect as much snot as possible.
And let us know the answer. How does that sound, Guy?
That would be fun.
Join us on the Conversations Curious Kids, wherever you get your podcasts.